Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay, from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll be the host for our presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, April 5th, 2026. The share ID numbers for Friday, April 3rd, are the following: for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 23,338. That's 23338. And for the 10 a.m. meeting, that number, 23,339. That's 23339. This morning, A Vision for You presents the third alternative: Have I Fallen Back to Sleep? When we arrived to Overeaters Anonymous, most of us have been mercilessly battered and dehumanized by this disease, and it beats us up pretty good. And the food acts really as a thief. It robs us of so many things that make life worthwhile. Our physical health is affected, mental clarity, relationships, and ultimately time. And page 151 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous provides a great description of our state of mind for many of us when we get here. It says, there was always one more attempt and one more failure. And it goes on a little bit later on that page. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And you know, the beauty of a miracle lies in its ability to transform the ordinary into the extraordinary. And we're reminded of things like wonder and hope and connection with miracles. And miracles are all around us. They often hide in plain sight. And it's as though they're kind of waiting for the heart willing to see them, you know. And the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are designed to facilitate a complete psychic change. It's referred to a vital spiritual experience. And when we immerse ourselves in the steps, we experience a profound shift in perspectives and attitudes and our personality that changes in a way that enables recovery from the mental obsession. You know, we learn we have an allergy and a obsession of the mind. And let's be clear, overcoming the mental obsession is critical because the text tells us over and over again that our main problem centers in the mind rather than the body. So we need a way to become untethered from the mental obsession. Otherwise, we will eat again. And so this transformative process described as a psychic change is necessary because the compulsive overeater cannot think their way out of this mental obsession. We tried that. It transcends our willpower. We must be brought into alignment with a power greater than human power. And it was always a matter of accessing power. To explain it in some other way suggests that you are both the sufferer and the power that liberates the suffering. And so we get here and we look around the room, and it doesn't take us long to recognize something: that we still live in the age of miracles. And joining us this morning to share her journey and navigating through the steps and undergoing a spiritual transformation is Terry A.H. from Maine. And she's committed to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. And so it's with great appreciation that we welcome her to the line this morning. Good morning, Terry.
Thank you, Larry. Good morning, everyone. My name is Terry A.H., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. And thank you so much, Larry, for that beautiful introduction. And it's definitely a true honor and a privilege to be here this morning. And, you know, I come to you this morning with just a grateful heart. And before I get started, I'd just like to begin with the set-aside prayer around my topic today. And so if you would just like to join me, just closing your eyes and just joining me in the prayer. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know for a new experience, and help me see the truth about my need to turn to you especially when I drift into the illusion of the third alternative. Open my heart to see clearly, to speak honestly, and to share your truth with love. Let these words flow through me, not from me. Amen. And before I get started this morning with my share, you know, just a little bit about my journey for those that don't know me. I came into program in 2000 for the first time, and I did get a food plan, but I didn't do the step work. So I was really relying on white knuckle abstinence, you know, group support. And eventually that led me back to picking up again, and I spent the next 4 years in relapse. So I know what that feels like. I came back on July 10th, 2004, with a willingness like never before, just to do things differently because I had had enough. And working, you know, I ended up working the steps as they're laid out in the big book. And by the grace of God, you know, I haven't found it necessary to pick up any of my alcoholic food since. And through both my relapses and my start of my recovery, I worked in a bakery department for 28 years. And I always laugh about that because it's like the perfect job for a compulsive overeater, right? So why I picked this topic this morning was because I've seen it in my own life, how easy it is to settle for something that feels better in that moment, but quietly pulls me away from God. And so over time, I've come to see that I often look for relief in ways that don't truly address what's going on inside me. And the way this really became clear to me was through a simple exercise. And in that simple exercise, I was asked to make two lists and look at the two simple questions, which are things I'm trying to stop but can't, things I'm trying to stop doing but can't, and things I'm trying to do that I cannot do. And when I answered those two questions honestly, I saw something deeper. I was trying, you know, just something deeper that I was trying, but what was happening was I was still relying on myself. That's when I began to recognize this space I was living in, not fully in the problem, but and not fully in the solution either. And what that led for me to understand today was what I now call the third alternative. And I'll be referencing some of the pages in the big book throughout my share around this topic. So you may be asking, or you may be curious, what is the third alternative? I've never heard of the third alternative. From my own experience, the third alternative is anything I turn to instead of going directly to God, often without realizing it. And it's not the original problem, and it's not the true solution. It's the middle ground I create to avoid full surrender while trying to get relief. So for me, it can look like I'm still in recovery, but underneath I'm managing instead of surrendering. I'm actually relying on myself instead of a higher power. And what I found over time, I've learned that this middle ground isn't safe. It quietly pulls me away from the solution. And that's where those two questions came into play for me and really helped me to see where I was still playing God. So I want to share what it looks like in the food and beyond the food. And I'm going to give some examples. But, you know, when I think about this, when I honestly look at the idea of the third alternative, I can see it very clearly in my relationship with food because I've been away from it for a long time. But what's been even more eye-opening for me is how it shows up in areas that have nothing to do with the food at all. So in the food, it can look like, you know, it can look like me telling myself I'm still in recovery, but I've loosened something. You know, maybe I'm not being honest. You know, maybe I'm going to the scale, checking every day to see if I've lost weight. Maybe I'm negotiating in small ways. It could look like maybe I'm thinking more about food than I admit, but I'm brushing it off. It's subtle. It's not always a full return to old behaviors, but it's a shift. I'm no longer fully surrendered, and I'm managing again. So I'm thinking instead of turning it over And in that space, I can feel the obsession quietly starting to rebuild. Not loudly, but just enough to let me know I'm drifting. And these will show up in behaviors, substances, or processes. It may be easier to see them in the substance or behaviors, but not so much in the process. So the substance or behaviors is what I usually notice when this happens, the things I'm trying to avoid or control. For example, it could be food behaviors or any distractions or even programs. It may look like on the surface, you know, it's stopping the substance or behavior. It can feel, you know, it can feel like progress, but it's only the tip of the iceberg. And avoiding it doesn't necessarily fix the deeper patterns that drive it. The process is what really keeps the problem alive. It's the inner patterns of thoughts, emotions, and compulsions that lead me to act out, even the original substance or behavior, when that is avoided. So I want to give you some examples. So with the food and eating behaviors, this is what it looks like when food, you know, it becomes a way of life, it just becomes a way of managing my life instead of nourishing my body. It can look like constantly thinking about food, planning meals all day, obsessing over what to eat next, sneaking or hiding food, binge eating, grazing all day, restrictive dieting. In the weight and body, when my worth and safety became tied to how my body looked on or measures, it could look like daily weigh-ins, sometimes multiple times a day, clothing size, and, you know, just seeing if my clothes fit or if I was getting into a different size, body checking in mirrors, measuring or tracking everything, comparing body to other people's, obsessing over goal weight, fitness apps, you know, calorie counters, you know, et cetera. And then when my routine around food became a place where I could go to escape, soothe, or feel in control, it might have looked like grocery shopping as an escape, buying large bulks of amounts just in case, frequent drive-throughs, delivery apps, restaurant hopping, spending hours researching recipes, watching food, you know, TikToks or YouTubes, you know, on the computer. And then when I try to create safety through rules or perfection and getting everything just right, it could look like needing perfect meal plans, labeling reading obsession, all or nothing thinking, punish myself with restricting of after, you know, after overeating, feeling like a failure for food mistakes. And when I use food to avoid numb or manage my inner world, you know, it often looks like using food to numb my feelings, using food for comfort, you know, comfort or safety. Shame spirals about eating, you know, self-hatred after eating, food fantasy. I mean, the list goes on. And then, you know, of course, with exercise, when movement became a way to erase, punish, or earn rather than care for my body, it could look like working out to erase calories, exercise guilt, you know, body punishment workouts, over-exercising, tracking every step or calorie burn. And, you know, it can also look like that in program. You know, when even recovery tools become something I use to manage instead of deepening surrender, it can look like attending multiple meetings a day to manage, you know, manage avoiding what's going on in my home life, endless step work to avoid feelings, inventory writing as a punishment, chasing the perfect food plan, fixating on sponsors' approval, comparison with others' abstinence or food routines, fellowship hopping for the perfect message, collecting food literature instead of practicing gentleness in the spiritual principles, being the perfect recovered member, trying to follow rigid rules instead of building discernment. And then it can also look like, you know, when I try to fix how I was feeling for buying, you know, or stocking, it could look like compulsive buying on binge foods, you know, spending excess money on diet programs. And again, the list goes on. But none of these are really the problems by themselves. When I use them to feel safe or in control or okay, the quietly becomes my center, and that's when I drift into the third alternative. And honestly, food or no food, it's really anything I go to in place of God. Anything that's pulling me away further from that connection. It can be anything that I go to get out of myself. So I have to ask myself today, being away from my alcoholic foods for a long time, what is it now that I'm going to that's not of God? Because for me, it's like true recovery isn't just about stopping the behavior. It's about surrendering the process, addressing the third alternative, and turning to that higher power to change the underlying pattern. So the shift into the solution doesn't happen all at once. It happens gradually. And I will tell you, the big book warns me on page 85 that it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. So this tells me I don't suddenly abandon my program. I slowly drift. I become less aware, less intentional, less connection. I lose the sense of urgency and that conscious contact with my higher power because I'm not relying on my higher power, I'm relying on self. And also, page 85 also reminds me that I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. That means that this is something I have to stay engaged in with every day. And when I don't crash immediately, but I begin to fall asleep spiritually. So when I reflect on the idea of the third alternative, have I fallen back to sleep? I'm really looking at something the big book makes very clear. There's only two ways to live. I can continue on the path of self-will, eventually reaching the bitter end, or I can accept spiritual help and live in the solution greater than myself. And yet, in my own experience, I have to share, I have often tried to create a third option, one where I appear to be in recovery, but I'm still quietly relying on myself. And for me, this is the third alternative. It's not an actual solution, but a subtle and dangerous illusion. It's the space where I'm no longer fully surrendered, yet not completely out of control either. It can look like partial willingness, selective honesty, or inconsistent action. And on that surface, I may still be attending meetings or speak in the language of recovery, but initially, I've begun to drift back into self-reliance. And this is where I start to believe that I can manage my life again, even in small ways. So when I ask myself, have I fallen back to sleep? I'm really questioning my spiritual condition. Am I still awake and aware of my need for a higher power? Or have I slowly disconnected without realizing it? Because in my own experience, I don't fall at once, I drift. And that drift often begins in the illusion of the third alternative, where I can convince myself I'm okay while gradually moving away from the very principles that keep my spiritual life alive. So again, I want to say this is not just about behaviors, it's about my inner life. And I may look okay on the outside, but inside I may be managing, controlling, overthinking, and relying on myself. And that's my version of the third alternative. It's really just another form of spiritual disconnection. And at the core of this is a familiar belief that somehow I can manage my life again, that I have the power. And the big book calls this the great obsession. It may sound like I've got this, I don't need as much support, but it's the same old delusion. And so when I look at this, at the core of this third alternative, it's a very familiar belief that somehow I can manage my life again, the delusion of control. And the big book speaks to this on page 30, calling it the great obsession that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy, and you can fill in the blank. For me, this doesn't just always show up in obvious ways, but sometimes it's quiet. It's the thought that I can ease up, that I don't need as much support, that I can handle things on my own. But when I look at it honestly, it's the same old delusion, just maybe in a more comfortable form. And what's powerful to me is that I'm not the first person to fall into this. And the big book gives us clear examples of what that looks like. So I'm going to share what I found as a version of the third alternative in five stories. So in the forward to the second edition, you know, Bill talks about prior to his journey to Akron, the broker had worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory that only an alcoholic could help an alcoholic, but he succeeded only in keeping himself sober. So when I look at Bill W. in the forward to the second edition, what stands out to me is that he wasn't just facing a failed business deal. He was facing fear. And that collapse of that business venture stripped away what he had been leaning on. And suddenly he was at risk internally. That's what I relate to. The third alternative here for Bill wasn't just the business itself. It was what it represented. It was a turn towards self-reliance, towards managing life through outcomes and security and money, instead of staying grounded in God. And when that fell apart, fear rushed in. And when I can so totally identify with Bill, because what hits me is how quickly that fear could have taken him back, because he wasn't just in the middle of drinking. He was in the middle of vulnerability. And in that moment, he realized something powerful. If he didn't reach out and help another alcoholic, he might drink. That's the shift. Instead of turning inward or trying to fix the situation, he turned back to God through service. And I have to say, honestly, I thank God for that failed business venture, because without it, we might not be here today, as he went back to what was working for him in the beginning with working with others, which led him to Dr. Bob. And then we have the man of 30. More about alcoholism. You know, the story of the man, his third alternative, wasn't obvious on the surface. You know, he wasn't actively drinking for a long time. You know, he stayed sober for 25 years. And it reminds me for myself that time does not protect me. But what happened, even after decades, was something quietly shifted. He became less spiritually connected, and eventually he picked up again. And his third alternative looked like living off yesterday's spiritual experience instead of seeking a new one each day. And it looked like for him, like believing time was enough for him to keep him safe. It looked like, you know, self-reliance slowly replacing God-reliance. And that tells me that this isn't about how long I've been doing this. It's about how connected I am today. So for me, the third alternative can look like relying on past recovery instead of present surrender. It's the belief that what I've done before will carry me instead of continuing to seek God now. And that's the dangerous place for me to be. And then we have Jim's story. I love Jim. What stands out to me in Jim's story is how subtle it was. His life was restored. Things were going well. But internally, something shifted. You know, he began to rely on himself again. You know, his third alternative was he believed he was secure. And without realizing it, he drifted. He began trusting his own thinking instead of continuing to seek God. He was feeling restored on the outside, but slowly disconnecting on the inside. And he wasn't turning to God in that moment. He was turning to his own confidence, his own thinking. So I can relate to that, because that's what the third alternative looks like in my life. Not always falling apart. It's that quiet belief, I've got this, and stepping out of that reliance on a higher power. And then we have, you know, the good old jaywalker. You know, I love him too. You know, the jaywalker shows me the insanity of my thinking, you know, repeating the same behavior and expecting different results. His third alternative was believing that he could safely keep jaywalking if he just did it differently, making new rules instead of, you know, making a real change, and trusting his own judgment after it had already failed him over and over again. I laughed at him because I can so identify. And believing his experience had made him, you know, thinking he was smarter and not powerless, and going back with a better plan each time. And that tells me it's the illusion of control. So I can see how that plays out in my own life. The third alternative is when I believe that this time I'll manage it, that somehow my way will work. But what I'm really doing is stepping back into that same pattern without turning to the solution. And I'm relying on my own thinking again instead of surrendering. And if I don't see the problem, I won't need a solution. And so then we have Fred. a last story, Fred, and more about alcoholism. And what strikes me about Fred's story is that nothing had gone wrong externally. You know, he was intelligent, successful, and full aware of the problem. But yet again, while completely sober, he made a decision that this time would be different. And that moment wasn't about lack of knowledge. It was about lack of reliance on God, and because he trusted his own thinking instead of a higher power. His third alternative was believing that knowledge would protect him and he could safely drink again. And that was his understanding and awareness would be enough to manage his life again. And making that decision based on logic, not on a spiritual connection, he didn't forget. He overrode what he knew. And I see myself in that too. You know, when I rely on my own thinking instead of a spiritual guidance, I step right back into the same delusion, that subtle danger and powerful reminder. So what I've come to see that this, with those stories, what I've come to see is that the middle ground is actually more dangerous than being completely out of control. Because when I'm at the bottom, which is obvious because I've had enough, I know I need help. I'm desperate, I'm willing. But when I'm in the middle, I can convince myself I'm okay. You know, I can say that I'm comfortable or stay just comfortable enough to avoid full surrender. But what I can see is I can look at this, like I'm in recovery while internally drifting away from the solution. And that's why the third alternative is so dangerous for me. It keeps me from fully committing while giving me just enough relief to stay stuck. So understanding the danger of the middle ground is one thing, but to really see how it plays out in my daily life, it helps me to look at 8 different stages. The stages show how I can slowly drift from being fully connected to God into a subtle, dangerous middle ground of that third alternative, and how, if I'm not careful, it can lead me back into falling back to sleep. So I want to share those 8 stages with you. And I'm going to try to do it in I'm just going to share what I've learned. So at stage 1, I've started, it can look like I've started the day grounded, like I'm connected. I'm connected to a higher power. I'm present. I'm surrendered. I've done my actions for the day, but life isn't perfect, but I'm still aligned. There's some peace. There might be some willingness. And this is a place where I've accepted spiritual help. So I'm good here. And then stage 2 is the subtle shift. I can begin to rely a little more on myself through this, the thinking I've got this, I don't need to pray as much. I can skip this, I can skip that. It's almost unnoticeable, but I've taken the wheel back. On stage 3, it's my thinking changes. I start playing God. My thinking becomes more self-centered. I stop managing, fixing, controlling. Resentments, creep in, fear, judgment begins to build. Because what we've heard on this line many times, all action is born in thought. And now my thinking is definitely off. Stage 4, is where, the emotional unmanageability comes in for me. I get restless, irritable, discontent. It starts to creep in. Something feels off. But instead of turning back, I push through. I'm like, I got this. It's okay. I'll deal with it. Stage 5 is the third alternative, where I fall back to sleep again. And this is the dangerous place because I'm not consciously choosing God. I'm fully not aware of I've chosen myself either. I believe, again, I don't need help. This time will be different. I can handle this. What's one day? What's it going to make a difference? And this is the illusion of the middle road. But it says on page 25, which is my favorite, one of my favorite pages of the big book, it says on page 25, there is no middle solution. I'm now in the third alternative, not surrendered, not fully defeated, just asleep. Stage 6, the obsession begins. It's like my mind starts to cycle you know, old ideas return, justified begins, and I'm no longer, like, I'm just no longer choosing. I'm being pulled and definitely disconnected. Stage seven is it's the transition of the delusion. You know, I truly believe that I have the power again. I call it the whisper of the lie. I tell myself, you know, this time I'll control it. It isn't that bad. This is the mental twist. I've lost all perspective. And so I see in this, I tell myself the lie, I believe the lie, and the lie becomes my truth. Stage eight is when this stage reaches their natural endpoint, and it can look like, you know, I then fall back into things that I'm trying to stop doing but can't, and things I'm trying to do that I cannot do, and whatever that looks like for me, or whatever that looks like for you, because there's so many things that I can be pulled to. Stage nine, you know, is either I wake up again through pain and surrender, or I continue the cycle to the bitter end. And for me, this is where I set, you know, I can tie these all in together. I can see that the third alternative is that deceptive space where I'm no longer fully relying on God, but I haven't completely fallen apart either, because I'm managing, I'm thinking, I'm substituting, I'm drifting. And the big book is clear. There is no safety there. The truth for me is when I bring this back to the big book, I'm reminded that there were only two ways for me to live. And those two ways is I can live in self-will, which leads me to the bitter end, or I can accept spiritual help. Because at the bottom of 25, at the top of 25, it reminds you that there's a solution. And for me, my problem has never been lack of trying. It's been lack of power. And that's what happens. And yet I've often tried to create a third option. So the third alternative is not something the big book offers. It's something I create. It's the illusion of the middle ground where I'm not fully surrounded, but I'm not completely off track either. And the big book makes it clear, half measures avails me nothing. So when I live there, I start to fall back to sleep spiritually. In the bottom of 25, which is such, you know, it really kind of explains it all. It says, if you're seriously alcoholic, as we believe, there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and we had passed into a region from which there was no return through human aid. But we had two alternatives, not three. This is, I always say, like, this is not, let's make a deal. You know, it says we had two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation best as we could, or the other was to accept spiritual help. So when I think about this this paragraph, when they talk about the middle of the road, I picture it like standing in the middle of a busy highway. You know, I tell myself again, I can handle this, but the traffic doesn't stop. You know, each car, you know, I laugh at this because each car is coming at me, and it represents fear, control, and self-will, and it's coming at me fast. If you pitch yourself on standing on, you know, on a highway, you know, with the cars coming at you, it's for me, like, the fear pushes me to react. The control pushes me to manage, and the self-will puts me back in charge. So here I am. I'm standing in the middle of it, right, thinking I can handle it. But the truth is, it's not safe, not for me and not for the people around me. True safety comes when I can step off the road and onto solid ground with God guiding me all the way. Because any middle-of-the-road solution is a solution without God. So I had to ask myself some honest questions, questions that wake me up spiritually. And those questions, you know, I had to really think about them. But the questions are, am I still trying to run the show? Am I surrendering or am I managing? What am I turning to get relief? And in what ways am I disassociating from my reality? Am I connected or just busy? because on page 62, I'm reminded that my problem centered in myself. Well, it's my need to run the show. So that's where the third alternative begins to, you know, begins for me. It just doesn't start with behavior. That's internally. And when I quietly step back into self-reliance and begin directing my life without real spiritual guidance, I may not even notice it at first, but it can look like thinking things through, making decisions, or even trying to manage outcomes. But underneath it all, I've taken my will back. I'm no longer seeking direction. I'm giving it. And that shift, for me, is the beginning of drifting into the middle ground where I'm no longer fully surrendered. Page 30, which is another favorite page of mine, speaks to what the big book calls the great obsession, that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy. For me, this doesn't always show up in the obvious ways. It can be, you know, like a soft pullback into self. Life starts to feel manageable. Things improve. And then the thought comes, I've got this. That's the illusion. Anytime I tell myself, I got this, that's the illusion. I start to fall back to sleep. And that's the moment I begin to drift back into that third alternative. I stop believing that my thinking is enough, that I don't need, you know, I don't need to do anything different, that I can handle things on my own. But when I look at this honestly, it's the same old pattern, just in a quieter, more comfortable way, if you want to say, more comfortable form. On page 25, the big book makes it very clear that there are only two alternatives, which I just read, you know, was to go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. There is no middle solution, you know, there's no door number three. And yet, in my own experience, I've tried to create one without even knowing it. It's whenever I turn to something else for relief, whether it's control, distraction, you know, not food today, but it could be food if you're in the food or, you know, are not spiritually connected, or even in my own thinking, I'm stepping into that third alternative. For me, it's like I'm choosing something other than God to manage how I feel. And it may be temporary relief, but it doesn't solve the problem. It just keeps me in that illusion of the middle ground that doesn't truly exist. On page 59 and 60, I look at this with, you know, it kind of like just brings me back to the foundation of recovery, surrender and willingness. And they remind me that half measures avails me nothing. You know, like I shared, you know, half measures, it just doesn't avail me nothing. And for me, this is where I have to look honestly at where I might still be holding on. And I can tell myself, you know, I can actually say that I want recovery, but if I'm still trying to manage certain areas of my life, control outcomes, or rely on my own thinking or my own understanding, then I'm not fully surrendered. And that's the space where the third alternative lives, the middle ground where I haven't fully let go, but I haven't fully awakened either. And, you know, I've just learned through my own experience that partial surrender doesn't bring full relief. And on page 85, it also reminds me that I just have a daily reprieve contingent on my maintenance of my spiritual condition. And that means this isn't something I do once. It's something I live every day. And it also warns me how easy it is to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels. And that's exactly how I fall into the third alternative. I don't crash. I don't crash all at once. I drift. I become less intentional, less connected. I stay busy. I'm not really present. I may still be doing things that look like recovery, but I lose, for me, it's like I lose that conscious contact with God. And before I know it, I've fallen back to sleep again. And so page 87, the last place that I want to just kind of talk about, page 87 brings me back to the solution, that conscious contact with a God of my understanding. Not just thinking, not just trying harder, but pausing, praying, asking, and listening. And this is what wakes me up. This is what keeps me connected. When I feel myself drifting into like self-reliance or looking for relief in other ways, this is where I return. And it always brings me back to Bill W.'s experience where, you know, he started working with others, he got away from that, and then he turned back to God and got back into the solution. And so this tells me I don't have to figure everything out. You know, I can turn to God in that moment and be guided. And instead of creating my own relief, I can receive it through connection. And that's how I stay spiritually awake daily. So when I tie all this together, I can see that the third alternative is that barely noticeable space where I just no longer full am, you know, I just no longer fully rely on this God of my understanding, but I haven't completely, you know, fallen apart either, you know, because you know, I'm managing thinking of substituting or drifting, you know, and I may not even be consciously aware of that. And the big book is clear that there is no safety there. So these aren't questions of judgment. You know, when I asked, you know, those questions about, you know, am I still running the show? You know, am I surrendering or managing? You know, what am I turning to get relief? Or in what ways am I disassociating from reality? You know, those are the questions. Those aren't questions of judgment. Those are just, they're invitations for me to wake up. And no, this isn't about getting perfect. It's about how truly connected I am to this power on a daily basis. Because the danger for me isn't always the obvious struggle. It's the subtle return to self-reliance. And it's, you know, I keep saying it, but it is, you know, from my own experience, it's that quiet shift where I begin to believe once again that I have the power, you know, and this is where I stop playing God. It's the second half of step one where my life becomes unmanageable. And why is it becoming unmanageable? Because I'm managing it. So, yeah, I've just learned so much about what the third alternative can be, even though it doesn't exist. And it pulls me into this delusion and illusion that, you know, that because I'm doing program, you know, that things are okay, but what am I really going to? You know, and I'll just give you another example. Like when I'm at a meeting, when I'm on a Zoom meeting and, you know, I'm an OA Zoom meeting, you know, am I reaching for my phone? You know, am I texting through the whole meeting? So this is what I call the things that I'm going to, you know, that take me away from that present moment. And there's so many other things that, you know, that I, you know, my list is pretty long and I'm definitely a work in progress, but those two questions really help me to get clear about, is God fully in this moment with me right now? And so in closing, I guess I just want to share, you know, what I've learned, you know, and what I've come to understand, you know, with this whole topic, you know, I understand there is no third alternative. There is no safe middle ground where I can both rely on myself and stay free. And that's just, it's just the reality. And the big book brings me back to the truth that there is a solution, but that solution requires my full participation. And it also tells me that those who recover are those who completely give themselves to the simple program. And so in order for me to give myself to the simple program, I have to have God's help. So what the third alternative has shown me, it's easy. It's easy how easy it is just to drift, you know, slowly drift, and how I can slowly fall back to sleep when I begin relying on myself again. And that awareness of that has awakened me to the importance of staying connected. And for me today, I can continue to rely on myself and drift back towards that same outcome, or I can stay connected to this power that loves me unconditionally and that keeps me free. And today, I choose to stay awake I choose to stay connected, and I choose to accept the help that I know I cannot live without. And so, the connection is where it's at for me today. And without that connection, I'm not going to know when I fall back to sleep. So I will stop there. Thanks, Larry, for just opening us up. And thanks, everybody, for being here today.
Hey, Terry, thank you so much. Thanks for a practical, clear message of hope that you offered this morning. We're so appreciative of your presentation. And a couple of things. So first, I'm going to give the share ID for Terry's presentation. That number is 23,342. That's 23342. And also, please hang around till the end of the recorded portion. That's where we'll ask Terry for her contact information. So stay tuned for that. And now we're going to transition to our Q&A portion. If you have a question for Terry, please press star one and unmute your phone, give your name. And now we have an opportunity for questions only, please. Who has a question for Terry?
Jason KP.
I got Jason.
Jeannie B.
Jeannie B. Who else? And you press star one to unmute. We've got Jason and Jeannie.
Judy N.
Gotcha, Judy.
Elaine S., New York.
Gotcha, Elaine.
Maura Z. Jessica.
Hey, Maura.
Jessica Z.
Who else? Hi, Jessica. We got you. All right, let me tell you who I heard. I have, in this order, Jason. Gotcha, Hanietta. You bet. All right, that's a good list. Let's stop there for now, and we'll kind of circle back if we have time. So I heard Jason, Jeannie, Judy, Elaine, Maura, Jessica, and Hanietta. So let's start it with the question from Jason. Hey, Jason, good morning.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for moderating, and thank you for the talk today, Terry. You know, I wonder sometimes about, you know, we work through the steps intensively, you know, we're doing a lot of work and writing 4 steps and getting 5th steps. And that does that maintain forever, or do we come into a comfortable spot where maybe we're doing less externally, but we're still trusting and relying on God? And, you know, how do we not come from this place of fear of like, oh, I got to keep going, I got to do more, I got to, you know, go to 100 meetings and make, you know, 400 phone calls a day, obviously hyperbole. You know, so is it fear-based, and is there ever a season or a time where we do less meetings and less phone calls and focus on practicing the principles in all our affairs, whether it's for a season, and can we do that while still maintaining not resting on our laurels while still maintaining a deep connection and a spiritual way of life? So curious your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Jason, for the question. Appreciate that. And from my own experience, you know, I have to ask myself, like, why am I going to all these things? Like, am I trying to, I always ask, like, if I'm doing a lot of things, you know, what am I trying to avoid? You know, and for me, that I can share one of my experiences where I was going to a lot of meetings, but I wasn't taking care of things that needed to be taken care of in the house. You know, I was avoiding family obligations. So I look at that as anything that I'm trying to avoid, and usually it's avoiding what's going on inside of me. Like, I want to deal with whatever's going on, so I'm going to 100 meetings. And I think over time, the more the connection that you have and the more that you can see where you're being pulled, those things can lessen, because I look at those as sometimes they can be third alternatives, because I'm relying more on the meetings than I'm relying on God. So I kind of look at this like I have to kind of check my motives, where I'm what I'm doing and where I'm going to for that relief of whatever. And I hopefully that answered the question. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Okay, next up we have Jeannie followed by Judy. Jeannie, good morning.
Good morning, Terry. Thank you so much for your talk. I'm so intrigued and aided. So my question is this. Do you believe there's ever an opportunity for us to not be obsessed? So I'm not talking about releasing connection, not talking about releasing surrender, but I'm talking about, do you believe there's a healing from the obsession such that things can shift in that way in terms of our recovery plan? Or do you think that that is just denial and seeking a third alternative? Thank you.
Thanks, Jeannie, for the question. I believe that the obsession can be relieved in definitely certain areas of my life if I let go. And I'm always turning back to God with those. But I also believe that because the way that my mind works, I can be pulled to really anything to take me out of myself, out of reality. And that's the stuff where it can become a third alternative if I'm not consciously aware of it. It's just stuff I'm doing unconsciously that I need to really look at. And those two questions that I, you know, shared at the beginning really helped me to see, like, oh, okay, I'm being pulled to this. I can't stop that. I'm trying to do this, but I can't. And, but if I hadn't asked myself or looked at that, I would have just kept going. So I think it's a new level of awareness. And yeah, that's been my experience.
Can you say the two questions again? Oh, sorry. I'll hang up.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
I asked if you could say the two questions you just alluded to.
Yeah, sure. So the two questions that really helped me, things I'm trying to stop doing but can't. And then the other one was things I'm trying to do that I cannot do.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jeannie. Okay, next up we have Judy followed by Elaine. It's your turn, Judy. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. Thank you, Terry, for your wonderful share. It was very informative to me. I learned so much. I'd never heard of the term third alternative, which is a new level of awareness. And I can relate to that. I'm just wondering, what do you do in the morning? What is your routine in the morning, staying, you know, to establish your day with your higher power? I guess it's your step 11. And throughout the day, this, you know, this reality, how do you keep yourself in reality to your evening routine? If you would please share that with me, that keeps you from taking that alternative, that keeps you aligned to God's will throughout the day and taking that action. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judy, for the question. And again, this isn't about getting perfect. I fall short. I fall short all the time. And that's where, you know, the nightly review comes in. I can look at that. But the gift of the nightly review is where I fall short, or I like to add in that, you know, where did I ignore God today? I can take what didn't work or where I fell short and ask God, you know, for forgiveness and what, you know, take corrective measures. But I bring that into my morning meditation. And, you know, because if I'm just looking at it at night, but not really asking God for help in the morning for those corrective measures, I'm going to continue that behavior. So it's really, you know, it's kind of a 6 and 7. I have to identify, you know, where I fell short and ask God to help me, you know, with the objectionable in that, you know, in that defect. And that's, you know, that's where, again, you know, this isn't about getting perfect, but, you know, it's that conscious contact all day long. You know, it's step 10, 11, you know, the walk around step where I'm continuing to watching, you know, continuing to stay connected. And I, again, I'm human. I don't do it perfectly. But the more that I'm aware of it, you know, it's almost like I do it rough until I learn to do it smooth. And, you know, because it's painful to look at that in the morning and not change the behavior. And the reason why I'm not changing is because I'm not asking, that I'm not connected. So if I'm aware of that action, then that's where the change begins. So thanks for letting me share. Thanks, Judy, for the question.
Okay, we have Elaine followed by Maura. Elaine, good morning to you.
Hi, this is Elaine S. from New York. Oh, my goodness. First of all, Larry, thank you for moderating and beautiful introduction. And Terry, you know, God brought you to me today. That's all I can say. Your presentation has been so helpful, so profoundly helpful for me. And my question is, you mentioned the nightly inventory, which is something that I always do. But can you also speak about how you use 10 steps and how you do them as well? Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine, for the question. So my journey's been a long journey, I've just learned over time. And, you know, I'll just share my own experience, because everybody does it different. And what works for you is great. And what works for me, you know, I've just learned over time. 10 steps, you know, I would do 10 steps. I would do a lot of writing. You know, I would do a lot of connection. You know, but as time goes on, the 10 steps doesn't say anything about writing, for one. So I try to follow the big book today. It's about, and this is how I look at it. Like steps four, we get connected to others so that we can do, you know, the latter steps, 5, 6, you know, the rest of the steps. In step 10, I'm turning to God so I can get connected to others. And that's been the difference for me. Like the 10th step is this connection with God. And yes, if I need to connect with people, you know, then I will. But I had a spiritual teacher once said, and I laugh at this, and I just, you know, hold it dear to my heart. He said, stop writing and save a tree. And that really kind of just put it in perspective for me, that it's not about, because what can happen for me, I can start worshiping the paper. You know, I can worship the paper and then do a lot of 10 steps to get relief. But in that relief, I'm not really getting better because I'm turning to people instead of God. And that has been my experience. So it's changed over the years. And I'm not saying I don't do 10 steps when I need to, but I don't worship the paper in order to do that. I worship God, you know, so that God, I'm turning back to God and not to the paper. And that's been my experience. Thanks for the question, Elaine.
Yeah, thanks, Elaine. Okay, Maura, it's your turn, followed by Jessica. Good morning.
Thanks so much.
Morning, Larry. Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much for your service this morning. And, oh, my God, I've just forgotten the speaker's name.
It's Terry. That happens to me sometimes.
Come more frequently. Forgive me. Terry, your presentation was so novel and so enlightening, and I really, really appreciate it. What are the steps you take when you realize you're in one of those stages?
Thanks, Maura, for your question. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely a daily reprieve, but it's like, okay, if I'm looking at those areas where, you know, things I can't stop doing, that's my connection, where I'm definitely in self-will. And it's not about going to another 12-step program. Yes, there are other 12-step programs out there, but there's not a 12-step program for, like, going to my phone when I'm on a meeting, or, you know, checking it or scrolling, you know, not that I know of anyway, but those things are like, okay, so I'm aware of it. Now I need to turn to God to help me. Like when I'm on a meeting, put away my phone, you know, get it out of reach. Whatever I have to do in order for that, to, you know, just for me to see, like,
I want to be present. I want to be present at the meeting. I want to, you know, I want to show up. And I've just noticed, you know, I laugh because I see so many people like me, you know, they're at a meeting and their head's down, you know, and that's me. Like my head's down into the phone while I'm listening or I'm doing something, I'm multitasking, but I'm not fully present. So I have to be aware of what I'm doing in order for God to come in and help me change that. And that's been my experience. Thanks, Maura, for the question.
All right. We have Jessica followed by Hannah Yetta, and then we'll kind of see where we're at, which I'm sure we'll have plenty of time. Jessica, good morning to you.
Hey, Larry. Good morning. Hey, Terry. It was so good to hear you, and I can so relate to the topic. You shared the example a few times of the phone usage as being a sign of the drift into a third alternative. It just helps me to have like concrete examples. Are there other examples where you notice yourself drifting, and what do you do again to sort of get back on the beam of focus on God?
Hi, Jessica. Yeah, thank you for the question. Yeah, there's many, many things. People pleasing, saying yes when I want to say no. Let me think what else. Trying to get organized, time management. I mean, there's so many. I mean, the list goes on, but it's one of those things where you have to get honest with yourself and ask yourself, like, what are those things that I'm trying to stop doing but I can't? You know, what is taking me away from, you know, being in the present moment, that connection with God? What am I going to, you know, as I always say, like, am I relying on this as a higher power? Like, what are the things I'm relying on? And when, again, it's the awareness that when I'm in those things, that it's definitely an indication that I could be falling back to sleep because I'm running the show again. I'm in self-will, and I need God's help too. It always comes back to, you know, God. It always comes back to higher power. Needing, because, you know, I have a God that's in the transformation business, and he can help me in all areas of my life. If, you know, if I'm willing to let him, you know, if I'm aware of where I need him. But if I'm not aware of it, I'm going to keep doing the same thing, and like the jaywalker, and expect different results. And I always say the jaywalker, you know, it's the definition of insanity, but the definition of insanity is, you know, doing the same things over and over again, you know, knowing that you're going to get the results and doing it anyway. So it really comes back for me. It's step 11 with the nightly review and seeing where I need to take corrective measures, you know, if needed, which is always given, because, you know, I'm not perfect. I fall short all the time, but I'm so grateful that I make mistakes, that I'm learning, because every mistake, you know, if I didn't make mistakes, I wouldn't need God. So I'm grateful for my mistakes, and I'm grateful for the awareness, you know, the areas of my life where I might be ignoring God. So yeah, that's been my experience. There's so much on my list. Feel free to reach out to me and I can share. Thanks, Jessica, for your question.
Yeah, thanks, Jessica. Okay, Hannah Yetta, it's your turn. Good morning.
Thank you, Larry, for your service. As always, you do a great job. Oh, wow. Carrie, thank you so much for your well thought out and just in such an orderly manner. It was very easy to follow you. So here I am standing in the middle of the highway with fear, control, and self-will. I'm standing there. All the cars are coming at me, and I'm still trying to manage. I think I can stop all these cars, right? What do you do next? That's my question. What do you do next?
Thanks, Hanietta, for the question. I'm smiling because I love the visual. And if you think about being in the middle of the road with all those things, I always ask, like, what happens when you stand in the middle of the road? And the answer is eventually you're going to get hit, right? So I can't remove myself without God's help. So it's like I have to be aware of what's happening, you know, the awareness, and really just asking God to remove me from the danger of the oncoming cars. Because, you know, left to me, I'll stand there thinking things are going to change. It's like the jaywalker, you know. It's like I think I'm not going to get hit when, you know, this, that's the illusion that eventually I will get hit, and I'll get hit, you know, with things or with going back to the food or whatever it is, if I stand there too long. But I have to be aware that I'm in the middle, and that's, you know, that's where the third alternative comes. It's like I have, you know, I have an option today, either to keep doing that, to go on to the bitter end, or accept spiritual help. There is no door number three. You know, it's I always think about this is not let's make a deal, because that's the illusion that there is a third alternative. Yeah, that's my experience. Thanks for the question, honey.
Yeah, thanks so much. Okay, we have time for more questions. If you have a question, press star one. Give me your first name. Who has a question for Terry?
Kiana in Ohio.
Is it Kiana? Did I get that right?
Yes, Kiana in Ohio. Thank you.
Gotcha.
LVV, Vancouver, British Columbia.
You know, I didn't get that first name.
Avi.
Is it Avi? Did I get that right, Avi?
Yeah, A-V-I, Avi.
Oh, simple enough. Thanks. Got Kiana and Avi. Who else? Anybody else?
Jordan L.
Gotcha, Jordan. I got Kiana, Avi, and Jordan. Then we can see where we're at. So let's do that. Let's start with Kiana, followed by Avi. Kiana, good morning.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for your service. This is Kiana W. in Akron, Ohio. And my question is, how do you stay out of that perfectionism and relying on, quote unquote, the program that may become the third alternative? I would just love to hear your experience on that. Thank you.
Hi, Kiana. Thank you for the question. And, you know, the perfectionism is, you know, is the third alternative, because there's no such thing. You know, it's really about, if I was perfect, I wouldn't need this program. I wouldn't need a higher power. So the perfectionism is, it can be that third alternative where I feel like I have to have everything just so, which, again, if you think about that, you know, for me, it's like I'm managing my life again, because I'm saying I know better than God. And that just does not work for me. And usually the perfectionism is coming out of fear. Like, it has to look a certain way. I have to be a certain way. And that's the illusion, again, where I'm playing God. Yeah, in simple terms, it's just your connection with a higher power to be okay with who you are and not have to be any more or any less. And I've had that experience. It comes from my childhood, where I had to be, you know, perfect or do things right to be acknowledged. And, you know, again, I get to do some work around that to see actually, you know. Because there, you know, I always think about tradition too. You know, it says that, you know, for our group purpose, there's one ultimate power, loving God as He expresses Himself. You know, and you know, He's got the authority. So I always ask myself, like, who told you that, and by what authority? Because usually it comes from an adult or an old belief. And so I know today, like, there's one who has all authority, and that's a loving God. So if the message isn't coming from God, then that's where I need God even more. So that's been my experience. Thanks for the question, Kiana.
Thanks, Kiana. Okay, Avi, it's your turn with a question followed by Jordan. Good morning.
Thank you so much, Larry, for facilitating, and Terry. Wow, what a share. So my question, and I'm not sure if I'm going to best articulate this, you've given some amazing examples of when you are drifting, you've given like practical as well as thinking and process. And I hear you when you say you either go to the bitter end or you accept spiritual help. I do all the things, right? I do my 11s, I have my conscious contact, I do my meetings, my outreach, and I'm still finding myself drifting, and especially around when things get tough. I'm fully abstinent and all that, but still drifting into food obsession at times. Can you give, I guess, just more practical examples of how, specifically how you get more into accepting spiritual help when you already do the conscious contact, you already do the 11s? There's something that is still a bit of a disconnect for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Avi, for the question. And yeah, I can share my experience with that. And that's all I have is my experience. It's not my opinion, but when I, my experience, when I start drifting again, I have to look at those things that I'm doing. Am I doing them on my own power? Like, am I just doing them as a checkoff? And I'm not really connected when I'm doing those things, because I've had that experience where, you know, I've had program where I just checked it off, but I wasn't really connected. So that's what I would kind of ask myself, like, am I doing all this program, you know, as a checkoff box or duty list, instead of really being guided by God and letting God bring me to these things instead of doing these things. Because I look at, there's a difference between doing and being spiritually guided by a loving God, or am I doing this because, you know, it's a to-do list. It becomes a to-do list. And I've had experience with a to-do list. Like, I have a to-do list every day. But I also, you know, I let that go and let God guide me, you know, in that to-do list, because it may look a certain way, my plan, but it may not be God's plan in the end. So it's really my connection with that to-do list. Am I just checking it off as, you know, as a way to say that I'm in recovery or doing it perfect or I'm doing all these things, but is God involved in any of it? So that's my experience. Thanks for the question, Avi.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to Jordan. Hey, Jordan, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks, Larry, for moderating. And thank you for your presentation this morning. It's been pretty stellar to listen to, actually. I've been sitting here listening, and I was thinking a lot about the actor that's mentioned in the third step in the big book, the actor who's trying to play the director. And when I first heard that passage coming into recovery years ago, I thought it was kind of stupid. I didn't really understand it, and it's taken me years in recovery and 12-step programs to come to appreciate it. And I was thinking specifically about that line that talks about being a victim of the delusion that we can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of life if we only manage well. Your presentation, the topics that you're discussing, reminded me of that line in the big book. So I was wondering if you could just talk about maybe how those relate to that line specifically, and the idea of resting satisfaction if we only manage well. Does that make sense?
Thanks, Jordan, for the question. So I love, you know, I definitely love, you know, the actors story, because I can so identify with that. And, you know, this is me running my own life. And when it talks about, you know, I can rest on my satisfaction, you know, if I only manage well, that's an illusion. You know, that's definitely an objectionable, because it's like, if I really had to get honest with that, like, how is that working? You know, I think about, you know, if I'm resting, you know, I'm not really taking any action, because I'm back into maybe the third alternative, thinking that I got this, you know, things are great, life's wonderful. But I also could be in denial about that too, because anytime that I think life, you know, that I don't need to do something different and I can rest on my, you know, rest satisfaction, that is definitely a middle of the ground, middle of the ground solution where I'm heading for trouble. So yeah, that's been my experience. And the victim of the delusion, you know, that's me saying things aren't going my way and then wanting to maybe blame God for things that aren't going my way that I've never really surrendered or asked for help with. And, you know, that's been my experience. Thanks for the question, Jordan.
All right. Well, I'm just going to give the opportunity for perhaps one, maybe two more questions if there are. If not, we can close at this point. So if you have a question, who else?
Hi, this is Sally P.
Okay, Sally. Let's go ahead and close with the question from Sally. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning. Thank you both for your service. In August 27th of Voices, it says, the devout overweight, unable to apply the religious truths, are agnostic as to application. And I found this to be kind of true for me. It's not that God's power was not enough. It's that I don't apply myself to his power. It's like all head knowledge and not application. So what would you say about that? What advice would you give me on that? Thanks.
I'm not sure if I understood the question.
It's about not applying the knowledge that I have to losing weight, to letting God. I mean, I totally believe in God, and it's not applying what I know, and not allowing God to apply program in Him, His presence, His awareness.
Mm.
I mean, me being aware,
okay.
It's not applying that. So that's my issue, is not applying it.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Sally. I get more clarification on that. And yeah, when I always think about Fred's story, you know, self-knowledge availed him nothing. And, you know, I always say, like, you can know about your first step problem, but your first step problem, just knowing about it is not going to keep you abstinent. It's about, it has to go from your head to your heart. Like, really admit, fully concede, like, knowing it is not going to change anything. It's about really head to heart, and that heart connection is where, I mean, it talks about on 55 that, you know, deep down within, every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God, and that's where it lies and is in my heart. So if I'm coming from the head, then again, I still, you know, could be coming from a place of control or managing, or, you know, just thinking that self-knowledge is working. But if it's not my truth, then where am I missing that connection? Because it is a head to heart. Like, I can't on my own power, if I'm thinking about it on my own power, it's going to eventually lead me back to probably my first step problem. So that's been my experience. Thanks for the question, Sally.
Yeah, thanks, Sally. And thanks to everyone for participating this morning, whether you're listening or those that pose questions. And most especially, Terry, thank you so much. We have such gratitude for your willingness to participate this morning and present. So appreciate it. Please hang out for the end of the recorded portion. We'll ask Terry for her contact information. So with that, I'm going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.